Okay, we are in the second week learning the very beginning of Sefer Melachim, Melachim Aleph, Perek Aleph. Let's begin on page 4, Pasuk Hey, just to remind us of the first problem involved in this Sefer. The problem is one of David's sons. V'adonia ben Chagis misnasi lemor ani emloch. So we saw this pasuk last week. We concluded last week by saying how David's son Adoniyahu felt it was appropriate for him to be the king. Ani emloch. As we saw already in the Mesudas David, he didn't go around screaming in the mountaintops, "I'm going to be the next king," but the way that he behaved and conducted himself gave the impression that that's what his motivation was. So on the top of page 4, V'yaslo rechev uperashim v'chamishim ish ratzim lefanov. He behaved in a way which is not typical of a normal guy, but rather that of a king, that he would have a whole entourage of people protecting him, a bunch of bodyguards, 50 people that would run in front of him, chariots, horsemen, everything. And according to the English brought down on the left side, the Abarbanel tells us where it says Melachim al pi hamasora, which is on the left column on where it says 5, exalted himself saying, "I shall reign." Adoniyahu spoke in the future tense, "I shall reign." Unlike the ill-fated Avshalom, he did not usurp the throne in his father's lifetime, but he assumed the trappings of royalty so that when the time came, he would already have been accepted as his father David's successor. And this is a proper segue to how we began Melachim Aleph, and that discussed how David was old. And not necessarily that he was old in age, but because of his lifestyle of being engaged in battle, it got the best of him. And politics, as we discussed last week, the stress of the job makes a person age very, very quickly. So Adoniyahu, according to this interpretation, was not ready to overthrow his father while David was alive, but he was just going through the motions so that as soon as his father would pass away, he would be the most logical person to take the position. Because after all, the only other person that would potentially be one who would accept his throne would be Shlomo, which of course we know is going to be the one. Shlomo, as we saw, was quite young at the time. He was only 12 years old. So between Shlomo, a much younger child, and Adoniyahu, as we'll see, is well respected by many, so he seemed to be the more logical of the choice. And we'll see why Shlomo possibly should have been the better one to be chosen, and was in fact that there was a prophet that prophesied that he should be the one. We'll see that shortly in Rashi and Pasuk Ches, but in the meantime, let's move on. Pasuk Vav says, I apologize, this copy machine is terrible. Lo atzavo aviv miyamav lemor. In all of David's life, and this actually seems to be the way that David conducted himself often, he would turn a blind eye, turn the other way, and he would not literally sadden his son, lemor, to say, Madua kachasis, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? David never spoke a single word. He saw behavior, which he saw the good, which is good, but if you see the bad, you have to also speak about the bad. If there's something wrong, and this is clearly rebellious behavior on behalf of his child, Adoniyahu, the fact that he didn't do anything does not speak well for David. Vegam hu tov toar ma'od. Another problem, as we'll discuss, is that Adoniyahu he was very handsome, which fed into the whole concept of gaivav, feeling haughty, feeling so powerful. Not necessarily that being beautiful matters to become a king. You can be an ugly king, but nonetheless, being beautiful is a way that a person feels proud about themselves, and therefore, this level of haughtiness continued as he felt that he'd be the successor. Yosi yoldo acharei Avshalom, and this child was born after Avshalom. So, what's obviously there's a connection. Avshalom rebelled, and Adoniyahu is someone who also, as Avshalom did, wants to give up the position.
There's a very big difference. Shalom, his father, accepted, made him feel badly about himself.
Right.
This guy, yes, made him feel bad about himself, but he made him feel badly. But this kid, his father, it's from the point of view of the child that his father never upset him.
Right. If we recall, just to remind ourselves, Avshalom at one point left Yerushalayim and he was coerced to come back, and David didn't even want to speak to him, don't want to have anything to do with him. So it's possible that could be the connection, that he felt that he wronged Avshalom by speaking too harshly, so now he overcompensated on the other side and didn't want to ever say anything negative to Adoniyahu. And that also is not good. It has to be some happy medium, some balance, right?
Of the son to say, my father never upset me. It doesn't say, I never upset my father.
Right.
It says, my father never upset me. The king never upset his son.
Right. It sounds, for some reason, it's a good thing for a parent to, not necessarily upset them, but to at least to challenge the child. So that the child should be able to grow. Otherwise, they can do whatever they want.
Have respect for the father because the father is looking after him. Here, he says, he left me alone, so I must be great.
Right. Must be. I'm not doing anything wrong. And the fact that I'm doing this, he's not speaking up.
It's acceptable.
This is how parents are raising their children now. Everything is wonderful. They get stars and points.
Right. Everyone's a winner.
Everything's winning.
Right. And then they grow up and...
Where are my stars?
Right. That's right.
Or very mediocre.
That's a sad reality check that young adults who become adults physically, but they may not mature as adults. So if we look at Rashi, Rashi says the word saddened is lohachisu. He didn't get him upset. Which means, the way, again, this translates, he didn't challenge him in anything that he did. He just let him have free reign, do whatever you want, it's no problem. My child is not my child, we're friends, we're equals, I'm not going to speak down to my child, want to hurt my child's feelings, not going to say anything if they're doing something wrong. Rashi says something very interesting. He says, we can learn from here, the one who holds back rebuke, which you're not supposed to do in general, if you see something wrong or inappropriate, to be quiet is wrong. But if it's your own child, it's going to bring about death, which could mean bring about death to yourself, or it can bring death to the child. If a person just enables, on a very extreme example, you see your child who's beginning to engage in gateway drugs, all of a sudden they do heavy drugs. So these, and the father protects him so he doesn't get arrested and nothing happens to the child, and or maybe gives him an allowance, doesn't make him have to work for his money. So this child ends up, unfortunately, dying or being very ill. It's a very extreme example, but also the person's not going to, there'll be no growth. Life is about growth. So if you don't if you don't rebuke your child so the child will grow, then they just are living life without much meaning, without helping and not doing as they should. And therefore, maybe Lydia Misa. When it came to David also, David's life is going to be threatened. David's life is going to be threatened because Adoniyahu is going to want to take over the position. And obviously, with David around, even though, again, according to some interpretation, it was only after David would die, but certainly it's a threat to David. So by speaking and being sensitive, in the short run you think is best for your child, you have to think the long run. Your child may be upset at you today for the next few minutes, and they'll say they hate you and they're going to cry, but at the end of the day you're going to teach them things which are so much greater and more important in the long run. Continuing in Rashi, V'gam hu tov toar. Also he was handsome, ka'av shalom. So you see that this is again the connection, that when a person is handsome or beautiful, so you start thinking that you're so important. Your insides, which is what really matters, your actions, the way you feel, the way you conduct yourself and talk, that's not so important because everyone looks up to me just because of my beauty. which in itself is just a gift from Hashem, which means nothing. He didn't accomplish anything. Shenemar uka Avshalom Ulohaya Ishiyaf. There was no other person as handsome as Avshalom. So he garmalahem shinisgo. This is what caused the ga'u, the haughtiness, this gaiva, right, this gaiva to come about. And in the English, this is what I mentioned before, the Abarbanel on page 5, on the left side, compares the beginning of Malachim to the beginning of Sefer Shmuel Aleph. And in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, we also found children that were engaged in inappropriate behavior. Namely, it was Eli's children, Chofni and Pinchas, right, that they also did things which were wrong. So he says that we cannot completely compare them. Unlike Eli, who sinned by tolerating his son's misbehavior, David's forbearance was not a sin. So Eli noticed that his children were actually stealing, they were taking food with this big pitchfork, they're taking meat, things which didn't belong to them for the sacrifice. Other accusations were thrown at them. And he didn't speak, that's much worse. So his children, Eli's children, were involved in evil things. But as far as David knew, Adoniyahu merely conducted himself in an excessively princely manner, which was improper but not sinful. Chaim Kanievsky says, as we just saw in Rashi, the problem is that you see your child is becoming arrogant. And by your child being arrogant and you not speaking up, not humbling the child a little bit.
What about with Amnon? No, but I'm saying
handling
up his children.
What do you mean? What happened over there?
He enabled Amnon.
And he kind of just, again...
He enabled him. He sent them out to him. He taught them out to him.
Right, that's right. That's right. So...
In English, it talked about the mother was very involved there.
What was that?
I said in the English, it talked about the mother who was involved in parenting. Did not do the job.
Right.
Right.
So, right, if you look... On page 5 also mentions that this mother was the same mother as Avshalom's mother. Right? His mother bore him after Avshalom.
No, she's a different mother.
That's what... Right. That's the... Correct. That's the question. And therefore, as it says over here in the English on the right side, they did have different mothers... But the point is that they both acted similar. Both mothers were similar in the way that they brought up their child. And it says that Adoniyahu's mother followed the example of Avshalom's mother in how she raised him. So instead of educating your child to be humble, which is one of the things which is in halacha, in addition to honoring your parents, there's also certain obligations you have to sit in their chair. You're not allowed to stand in their place. You're not allowed to disagree with them under certain conditions. And all these reasons is not just because we want to destroy the child's self-esteem. We want to build up a child's self-esteem. But at the same time, the child has to know that they're a child and that a parent is on a different level, that they have respect for their parent and that they are not on that level. And therefore, if you break down those barriers, you're not helping your child at all. So that's the reason why Halakha teaches that a child has to be respectful, not to sit in my father's seat, not to stand where my mother stands, to have show a certain level of respect which humbles the child. It doesn't destroy our self-esteem. On the contrary, it shows how great my parents are, and as they love me and they're educating me and they're rebuking me, I'll be more willing to listen to what they have to say because now I look up to them and I'll be respectful and listen to what they have to say. But certainly they was not the same mother. But both of them were equal in that they both educated their children in a way which caused them to become rebellious. Furthermore, it's brought down in the Medrash Tehillim, which is not here, that we see also another similarity in Avshalom and Adoniyahu, in that both of them gathered up horsemen and chariots, and this was, again, something which occurred in the time of Adoniyahu. Adoniyahu, as well as Avshalom, were also Baal Machlokas. Machlokas, in definition, is an argument, but when you cause something which is harmonious to be destroyed, right, you break Right, because machlokas is to like is comes like a chelik, it's portions. You're splitting things up. So that's what he was trying to accomplish, as well as Avshalom. So therefore, we see these similarities continuously between the two. If we look in, okay, let's move forward. Pasuk Zion. Okay, so David said nothing, and all of a sudden Adoniyahu is now interested in exalting himself more and more. Yudvarav im Yoav ben Suria v'im Ebyasar haKohen v'yazur achrei Adoniyah. Adoniyahu decided to not just do this on his own. In order to be able to push a king out, it's necessary for you to have a majority or a very strong group of people that are backing you up. And therefore, what he did was he gathered up some very powerful people, which we've learned about numerous times in the previous Sefer and Shmuel, including Yoav ben Suria, who seemingly was always on David's side, did a lot of the dirty work for David, killing people and whatever. He also gathered Ebyasar the Kohen and the Azar Acharei Adoniel. For some reason, no longer were they siding with David. Instead, they turned their allegiance to his son, to Adoniyahu. The question is why? And as we're going to see in Rashi, is that everyone has an ulterior motive. Things are not necessarily done l'shem shemayim. When it came to David being the king, the reality is, if this is the position he was supposed to remain in, l'shem shemayim, he's supposed to stay. But if I have an ulterior motive that it'll be more beneficial for me, for him not to be the king, then all of a sudden I may want to be part of a rebellion. That's what Rashi says. It says, Im Yoav ben Suria. What was the problem with Yoav ben Suria? So Rashi says, Lefi haya yodea shebelivo shel David olav. He knew that David had it in for him. He knew that David, at one point, if it's not today, it'll be tomorrow or the next day, David's going to have me assassinated. He's going to kill me. There's no question. Why would David want to kill Yoav ben Suria? All the things that Yoav ben Suria did, which was so good, because David also was upset at some of the things that Yoav ben Suria did. Al-Shaharagis, Avner, Va'amasa, Va'avshalom. If you remember, certainly the last one, Avshalom, David was so upset that Avshalom was killed, which in itself was problematic, because Avshalom was rebellious and was interested in doing harm to David. But at the end of the day, when it's your child, you feel and sense that tremendous pain. So much pain, as we mentioned on Yom Kippur by day, that he kept crying, said, Bani, Bani, Avshalom, Bani. He kept saying 8 times, crying and begging. Actually, as we saw, that he should be elevated out of Gehenim into Olam Haba, to Gan Eden, to heaven. And he was upset, very angry, that Avshalom was killed by Yoav ben Suria. So Yoav always knew that at one point, when I'm vulnerable and weak, when he has an opportunity to, he's going to kill me. And David may not be able to do so, because he's older, he's weak, he doesn't have the same power. But when his child Shlomo takes over, one of the first things he's going to start doing is removing certain people in position of power. And instead of having them retired in the good old days, they had them really retired, killed. Therefore, that I'd rather have a good relationship with the next king, Adoniyahu, and therefore I'm going to side with him now, because it looks like David is not going to be around much longer, and his kid, 12-year-old Shlomo's, I don't want him because I'll be killed. Much better to take this one opportunity, otherwise I'm dead. So that's the reason why Yoav ben Suria felt it was in his best interest to side with Adoniyah. And the question is, so why didn't David just kill him right away? Why didn't David just kill Avshalom? So if you look in the Radak says, which is about 6 lines before the very bottom of this page, or the third to last line before the lines get extremely wide, the first word on the line is Avyasar. It says, Ki Yoav Yoda, because Yoav ben Suria knew. Ki David hoy sono so. It wasn't just that he was a little upset. he felt and he knew that David hated him. Such a strong language that David hated him. Shari Kolu al Shaharg Avner. He was cursed because, and we'll see this soon, that he was cursed because he killed Avner, Vigam Avshalom Harag, and he also killed Avshalom. So he did all these things. Yeah, Yoav killed Avshalom. Yoav killed Avner. Yoav killed Avshalom. Yeah, it's the same thing as what Rashi said. Shitzivaho lav lishmor shliyargu. Because he was really told not to kill him, but he did it. Vigam Amasa Harag, he also killed Amasa. So these are the things that Rashi said. And this is the reason why I'm saying this Radak for the next line. All of these reasons David hated him for it. So why didn't David simply just kill Yoav and Suri right away before? David Yari Oso. David was afraid. Kol Yumechaya. Every moment of his life, because he was involved in battle, which can mean one of two things. Either he hated very much, David hated Yoav and Suria, but because Yoav and Suria was such a great military man, to kill him would be, he'd be afraid to kill him because who's going to win my battles? I'd rather have this guy I hate, but at least he's on my side. If I kill him, I'm not going to have any great generals to be able to fight my battles. Or that if he would try to kill Yoav, Yoav being so powerful and having such a huge army that he's in charge of, he could easily just turn around and have David killed. So that's the extra piece that Radak mentions.
David would kill him?
What?
But if this was against David, wouldn't that fit equally against Shlomo, who was so young, that if David was afraid to kill him and wanted him dead, then wasn't he afraid that he would do these things against Shlomo?
Who says that Shlomo would not be afraid?
Shlomo was 12 years old.
Right.
I mean, if David, who had all the battle experience and all the, you know, was afraid, wouldn't Shlomo be afraid too?
You would think so. You would think so, but
why would David leave it for his son to take care of? That's it. I'm just curious.
I don't know. I mean, instead of saying the fear factor, you could also say that because he was involved in so many battles, even though I hate him, but he did so much for me, that I can't kill him. But my child, who does not have that rapport with him, that doesn't answer your question, because that's not really what the Radak says. It's a possibility. Okay, but, and also, the other thing is, what you don't know, when they say, what you don't know can't hurt you, what you don't know, you're not going to be scared of either. So David knew how powerful, this maybe will answer their question, being on the Radak. David knew how powerful Yoav and Suri was because he saw him in battle. Shlomo was a little kid. He didn't know. So Shlomo would say, yeah, have him killed. Maybe Shlomo just didn't know how powerful he really was. And therefore, Shlomo would not have been as afraid as David. Maybe. Okay. Continues Rashi. Ve'im Evyosar HaKohen. Also, Evyosar HaKohen was chosen by Adoniyahu to join him in the rebellion. And he accepted. Why did Eliezer HaKohen wish to side with Adoniyahu, not with David? So Rashi says, "Shnistalik min hakahuna." Right, exactly right. "Shnistalik min hakahuna." At one point, Eliezer was the Kohen Gadol, but he was removed from this position. Mishabarach David mirushalayim nivnei Avshalom. When David was running away from Avshalom, he left Yerushalayim. So he had his own entourage, his own group of people, including Eliezer HaKohen, and he didn't know what to do. So what do you do when you don't know what to do? Shel Urim V'Tumim. You turn to the Kohen Gadol, and you ask Hashem, through the means of the Urim V'Tumim, to get an answer from Hashem. However, Be'ulsalo, it was not answered. There was no answer. Shenemar V'yal Eliezer went up to try to do such a thing. Etc. Basically what happened was that he was asked, please tell me what I should do about Avshalom. He wasn't responded, so therefore he was removed of the position. So no longer was he in the position of power being the Kohen that everyone turned to, because why didn't the Urim and Thummim work? Probably wasn't worthy, at least for that moment. So now, Eviyasar HaKohen says, why should I remain loyal to David? I was a somebody, now I'm a nobody, I'll remain a nobody under Shlomo. I'd rather be a somebody again, and therefore, I'd rather side with Adoniyah. So that's the reason why Rashi says that he chose to be part of the rebellion. However, Pasuk Ches tells us that not everyone took part in this rebellion. Pasuk Ches tells us, with Sadek HaKohen, Rav Neahu ben Yehoyada, V'nasan HaNavi, V'shimi V'rei, V'agiborim Asher L'David, Lo Hayu Im Adoniyahu. There are people, Lo Hayu, that were not with Adoniyahu, that did not side with him. And some of these people were people that remained loyal to David and had positions of power. One was Sadok HaKohen. Sadok was the Kohen who replaced Eviyasar HaKohen. When Eviyasar HaKohen's Urim and Thummim didn't work, Sadok was put in his place. So Sadok obviously was pretty happy in his job, and he's not interested in losing it. So Sadok HaKohen stayed with him. That's what happened at the time. Yeah, at that time when he was, you know, running and he needed an answer, so he turned to his trusted Kohen Gadol of Yasar HaKohen. Nothing happened, so he removed him and put Sadok HaKohen in his stead.
That's not illegal. Would that be a legal thing for a king to do?
Doesn't he have to have
a Kohen Gadol is a Kohen Gadol, whether the king could.
It's usually cast down for lineages, that's right.
But if you're not fit to do the position, you're not. We need to replace you.
So
you're not doing the job.
So is he the one who would...
What was that?
The king is...
Apparently so. We don't find that he was reprimanded for that decision of switching positions.
But would this man have been the next in line? Or he just picked who he thought would be workable?
It's not so clear. I'm not sure. Probably. We know that in Halacha there's more than one Kohen Gadol. There's actually, you know, there's also the Sagan Kohen Gadol, so it's the deputy Kohen Gadol he's called. So it's possible that maybe Tzadok was in this position right underneath the Kohen Gadol, and then he just took over. It's not so clear from those sentences. But Tzadok, therefore, did not want to join the rebellion. Yahu ben Yoyada, who was the trusted advisor to David, also remained loyal to David. But Nasan HaNavi, who was Nasan HaNavi? So Rashi says the reason why Nasan HaNavi would not have joined Adoniyahu was probably for the most legitimate reason. Rashi says on the bottom of this page, what?
He was anointed.
Shenavu David Shishlomo Yimloch. Shlomo wasn't anointed yet, but Nasan HaNavi, as we didn't see that in the sentences, but the rest of Rashi quotes Chronicles, Divrei Hayamim, that said that Nasan HaNavi already prophesized to David that Shlomo will be the next king.
That's what Bathsheba says when she comes to the king. We don't know that.
Right, we're gonna see that in later sentences. We didn't see any of these things,
right.
But apparently this was...
Together, we find out about it, so right. It's not quite clear.
Right, at this point it's not clear, but as the dialogue between Bathsheba and Nathan to David, as we'll see later on in this chapter, we'll see that in fact David did know 100%. It wasn't just a random selection of choosing Shlomo for no good reason, but Nasan HaNavi received this as a prophecy. And David knew definitively that Shlomo would be the king. So it makes sense that Nasan HaNavi is not going to join him. V'shimi. Shimi, if you look at the Mesudas David, the Mesudas David says, who is Shimi? Ulai hu Shimi ben Gera. Perhaps. This Shimi is referring to Shimi ben Gera. If you recall, Shimi ben Gera
cursed him.
Yeah, I was looking if it says it in English. It doesn't. In fact, it says that he was like on a mountaintop and he was throwing dirt and throwing rocks and kicking. He was really angry. But later on, he did come back. He did come back and apologize. Exactly. So, Mesudas David said, now, when a person's apology is it's heartfelt, but still maybe in the back of their mind, they're thinking, you know what, a better side of a dove in today. But as soon as I have an opportunity to get rid of this guy, or if there's someone else, I'm going to side with Adonijahu. That's perhaps the reason why Mesudas David doesn't say it's for sure Shimon ben Gera. It says, ulai, perhaps it's Shimon ben Gera. So it probably is, because we've never heard of anyone else by that name, except for Shimon ben Gera. But Mesudas David is not 100% confident that that's who it was, because who says that he remained loyal? But nonetheless, that's probably who it is. Verei, just translated on the English as Rei. Rei also means a friend, a companion, which in the English, De Barbanel notes that the word Rei generally means my friend, and suggests that this friend was Hushai, who was described as David's friend, which we've learned a little bit about him anyway. Giborim Asher David, also other soldiers, powerful people, did not join Adonijahu. So here again, we have this split between two powers. Pasuk Tes, V'yizbach Adonijahu Tzon Ubokar Mari. So Adonijahu, to show that he has this connection, this power, he starts bringing offerings. Sheep, cattle, Mari is translated as in the Radak, in the Matar, the Targum is the very top Radak, Upatimin, fattened calves or fattened animals. When it comes to the sheep and cattle, they were just from the flock. They were just took them from the barn. However, Marie, Hutsonu Bokashim, Mefutomim Beit El Avos, that it was by the trough of this place, this barn, in which they dedicated these animals specifically for offerings, and instead of them being thin and emaciated, they would fatten them up, almost, if you will, zekir l'vianvehu, to beautify the mitzvah. Instead of giving some cheap sacrifice to God, you give something in which you spent so much time fattening up. You can say, well, I'm fattening up this animal's going to be burnt on an altar anyway, but again, that shows your connection to God, that you're willing to spend all this time and energy fattening up an animal as an offering. So it was all these offerings that were brought, and where was it? So the pasuk continues, Im Evan Hazocheles Asher Eitzel Ein Rogel. So the place, I didn't have a map, there was no map I could see, but it was an Evan Hazocheles, which is just the Zocheles stone, Asher Eitzel Ein Rogel, which is next to this place called Ein Rogel. Ein Rogel, the Rashi tells us, what is Ein Rogel? What is the significance of that? Something about the foot, a regel. So Targum Yonasan, Ein Katsiru, Hu Kovas. This is a place in which one would do their laundry. Shemisakin Bigdei Tzemer Baraglov, that they would prepare and clean their Bigdei Tzemer, their woolen garments or their clothes, Baraglov, by trampling upon them with their feet. Al Yidei Beita, actually by kicking. So that's a way that to get the dirt out of your clothes before your Maytag washing machines was taking them and kicking your clothes until the dirt came out. But also, perhaps, when we're in the middle of this pasuk, I didn't see this anywhere, the symbolism of kicking out the dirt and cleaning new fresh garments is perhaps what Adonijahu is trying to symbolize by his taking over the position of kicking out this old, dirty guy, this guy who is all washed up, or not washed up yet, I should say, and have a new, fresh, clean person in his stead. But Yikras, Kol Echav, he called all his brothers, B'nei HaMelech, V'chol Anshei Yehuda, Abnei HaMelech. He called everyone, all of his brothers, so that they should all see what he was doing. Now, it's brought down in the English over here, on the right top, it says, it seems a bit strange that Adonijah's brothers would all attend, although they must have known that David had designated Shlomo as his heir. Perhaps they did not know that Adonijahu intended to usurp the throne. So maybe they were just coming for a barbecue, a nice free lunch. V'as Nasan, but we know there is no such thing as a free lunch. V'as Nasan Hanavi ben Yahuvin, V'as Hagiborim, V'as Shlomo Achi Bokara. He didn't send invitations. When it comes to certain, like a wedding, or a simcha, you send some invitations to people that you want to come, and the people you definitely do not want to come, you definitely don't want to send them invitations because you don't want them to come. And so one of the people that you certainly would not want to invite to a rebellion party is Shlomo. So,
was it known that Shlomo was going to be taken over?
Apparently so. Apparently so. Again, it's not so clear in the sentences, but based on this sentence right here, it sounds very obvious that Adoniyahu knew that Shlomo was supposed to be the next king. Why did he invite every one of his brothers except for Shlomo? It must be that he knew that Shlomo was supposed to be the one who takes the position. And you can also understand why he didn't invite Nathan HaNavi. Because Nathan HaNavi was the
one who
gave the Nebuah, the prophecy. Okay.
Maybe Shlomo was just very endeared to David.
He was a king.
Maybe you have to be a certain age. 21 and under, not admitted or something.
Why do I have to understand that man knows?
Well,
we don't, but why do you assume that he didn't know, especially if Nathan, you know, not on the Nebuah, so then either Nathan couldn't pass through.
Then make it a secret.
That's it. I guess the question is, was it a secret?
We're going to see that David did not know any of that. David had no clue what was going on over here. We're going to see that. So, again, it's very clear that that's why he did not invite Shlomo, because he figured that, obviously, you know, or Nathan, because they'd be like, well, what are you doing?
What do you mean, David had no clue of anything? You mean of the rebellion?
We're going to see that David did not know what was going on at the time. Yeah, we're going to see that in this sentence we were about to read right now. Pasuk Yud Al, Vayomer Nathan El Basheva. So Nathan, knowing all this, Nathan was not invited. He wanted to be invited, maybe, but for the food, but not for the rebellion. He went to Basheva, and who's Basheva? So Pasuk continues and tells us, that's Aim Shlomo, that's Shlomo's mom. So he didn't go to the 12-year-old kid to say what's going on. He went to his mother. And perhaps Bathsheba also has a way with David that Shlomo does not. So he went to Bathsheba. And obviously, we knew that Bathsheba was the mother of Shlomo, but the idea is that this is the reason why he went to Bathsheba, because she is connected to Shlomo. Halo Shemata, didn't you hear? Ki Malach Adoniyahu ben Chagis. That Adoniyahu is accepting the position of the king. He's acting as a king. He's trying to win over favor of many people by giving them free food, which always helps. Adonenu David lo yada. So that's what those words pretty clearly are said, that David did not know what was going on. You realize what's happening. So we can just allow this to get out of control, or we can inform and educate David to stop this. Pasuk Yud Beis. V'ata and now l'chi yatzeich na'itza. Please accept my advice. Please do it. This is for our best interest. U'malti es nafshich es nefesh b'nich Shlomo. So because otherwise you are going to be
escape.
You're gonna need to escape if things escalate out of control. You're going to be in tremendous trouble. So on this, the Radak points out what exactly are they running from? Umalti es nafshich. So Radak says the obvious first of all, which is about four lines from the bottom. Ki chashash sheim yimoch Adonim, that Nathan was concerned that if Adoniyahu would in fact be the person who would take the next position of the king. As soon as that happens, so when is he going to be the king? David's going to die. Then all of a sudden, this guy's the next king. Yomus Achrei Mos David, Basheva v'Shlomo. Immediately, what's going to happen? They'll be killed. That's what happens. People get killed immediately when you have a next new king to remove any of the competition. Kedei in order shel yetzi lo iror b'malchus, so that no one should complain or say anything that he is not the proper king. So to remove Bathsheba and Shlomo, who would be the most vocal. So by removing them, what will end up happening is they'll be very quiet and you'll be able to continue as being a king. So you're going to need to be on the run for your life. That's answer number one. Simple explanation. The Radak then says a second interpretation. Doesn't mean you're going to be running for your life, but mibizoyon. You're going to be humiliated. You're going to be ashamed. Shlo to avadim ladoniyahu. Because if Adoniyahu is the next king, you think he's going to treat you respect? You think he's going to treat your son with respect? So that he will may eventually rebel against him? He'll put him all the way down. You'll be a lowly servant. And it'll be such a humiliation that you would have rather have run away than to have been put into such a situation. So you're going to need to run away in order to be able to prevent this from happening. Now Rashi says a very beautiful interpretation. What should you be running away from? Rashi says, "Umalti es nashich min ha-machlokas." That when it comes to machlokas, Nasan the Navi says the best thing a person could ever do, instead of going head on and confronting and being confrontational with someone else, is to run away from it. And that's certainly a musar for ourselves. That when a person is confronted with issues, and you know that you could get involved, it'll get worse and worse and worse, so you remove yourself from the machlokas. And that's what Nasan the Navi would say that you would do, as opposed to allowing yourself to be in the thick of it all. Okay, Pasuk Gimel. So, what should I do? What advice are you going to give me? Pasuk Gimel. Lachi uvoi el hamelech David. Go to your husband. Go to David. The amarte love. You have to speak to him. Lata adoni hamelech. Is it not that you are my master, the king? Nishbata lamoscha leimor. You swore to your mate, to your servant, to your maidservant, which is referring to herself, which is just in a humble manner. Of course, it's not the case as a wife, but she's speaking humbly to the king. Ki Shlomo b'nech imloch acharai. That Shlomo is going to be the next king. It doesn't say, it's interesting, ki Shlomo b'nech. Shlomo b'nech means your son, not my son. Right? It's not me. This is your child. Of course, they're both.
But if you go back to Il Pasuk, when she identified Adoniyahu, she said the son of Hagit, which is also, I thought, was important.
What do you mean? Oh, Adoniyahu is the son of Hagit, which is is referring to as the by the mother, not by the father.
But that's the way it is, isn't it? No, but that's not the point. I think it's just the point that using these terms to identify who is being spoken at probably has some kind of.
But now they had the Hagit clearly had the influence on his life, as we said.
David said that Shlomo, your son, to
no, son is telling her. Say to Shlomo, to David.
Right, that Shlomo b'nech, that your son.
No, she's talking to David. This is what she should say to David.
Right.
You promised me that my son,
you swore to me. You swore to me.
She said, that this is what David said to her. Shlomo is your son, will be the king.
Oh, you're saying good. Oh.
That's what.
Right, right.
No,
so
female.
You're right.
Saying it to,
you said to me that your son,
right.
Referring to me,
right.
Very good.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah,
that's correct. That's the correct reading. Very good. For Yeshev al Ki saying that he was going to be sitting in the throne. Umadua Malch Adoniyahu. So what's going on over here? Adoniyahu's the king. What are you allowing over here? This is what you have to. This is what you promised me, and you're not staying true to your word. Hine. Odach medaber sham imamel. So you're going to think, well, one second. This is going to end up, even though it's husband and wife, going to cause some heated dispute, and he may say, no, Adoniyahu should be the king.
Do we know when that is written down that David promised
Bathsheba and Yisrael?
No. That's so clear.
Two places where it's noted. Look on page 7 on the left side, the choice of Solomon.
It says over there. Right. So, the question is, well, what are you doing? How could you allow Adoniyahu to be to act as king when Shlomo is supposed to be the king? So, Nasan maybe sensed some concern that she would maybe need some support for her not just to go in by herself, but to have him, Nasan, also there. Hini odach medaberes shami mamel. That while you're speaking to the king, bani avo acharayich umilesi es devarayich. I'll come in afterwards. Right, whatever. Right. So I'll let you initiate to start the conversation going. So this way, maybe he doesn't feel threatened that the two of us just barge in on him. But you go speak to him, and then I'll come in afterwards, and I'll smooth everything out. The Tavu Basheva El Hamelach Hachadara. So in fact, Basheva took this very important advice, which her life was on the line, and she went to the king, and he was in the chamber, in the room. Vesudas David says, L'cheder Mishkavo. He was in the bedroom, which makes sense. Why was he in his bedroom? As the Pasuk says, well, we're going to see that right now. But it doesn't, it makes sense he's almost bedridden, it sounds. As the Pasuk says, V'melech Zaken Ma'od. No longer is he old, now he's Zaken Ma'od. So from Pasuk, the beginning of this chapter, he was, David was a Zaken. And now, 10 sentences later, he became older. He was Baba Yomi, right.
But it didn't say Zaken.
Didn't say we're old. So that's the way that if we look in the Radak, Zaken doesn't mean age. It doesn't mean age. It could be wisdom. But if we look in the Radak points out it's Cholosh Ma'od. He's very weak. So a person could be 30 and be a Zaken in the definition of a Zaken. And you could be... Right, that's what it means, right. You can be 90 but be vibrant and strong, so you're not considered a Zaken if you're able to do and live. Right, and that's the reason why the Radak said that he, because of the wars, all the stress of politics, that made him a Zaken. So it has nothing to do with your age. Age is just a number. It has to do with the way that you take care of yourself. That is what makes a person a Zaken. So he became a Zaken Ma'od. He already became extremely weak, and which means that his time on this earth was limited. Page 8. V'avishag hashunamis misharas es hamelech. So Avishag probably got him some water, a cup of tea. She was misharas es hamelech. She served the king. Just trying to be gentle over here, guys. So if you look in the Radak, Misharis es hamelech, the fourth line, the second to last word is v'af. Ki hoya hamelech b'tzina b'mitaso im avishag. Now, can you imagine? Okay, fine. So, David,
where are you reading from?
I'm in the Radak on page 8, the fourth line. V'af. This is the second to last word on the line. Now, before we read this, you have to understand, she barges in, not into his palace, but into his bedroom, and he has a woman by the name of Avishag, his shunamis, who is there. So it's true that Bathsheba is his wife. However, there still has to be some boundaries, at least knock, which apparently she did not. So what's going on over here? What's going on over here? So don't get too excited over here, right? The Radak helps me out. V'afki hoya hamelech b'sinda b'mitasa, even though he was private and he was in his bed, im avishag, so it doesn't mean that she was giving him water, she was in bed with him, V'lo hayu reshus l'adam acher lichanes shlo reshus. You can't just barge in on a king, which is the whole story about Esther going in to with Achashverosh without being summoned. Avihi, but when it came to Bathsheba, l'fisha hayse ishto nichnas hachadar b'lo reshus. Apparently, the Radak feels that it's not a problem that the relationship of a husband and wife, even though there was another woman there, that she was allowed to enter. And perhaps, as we already learned, even though you don't like this, you don't want to believe it, but it said that Avishag and David did not in any way have any intimate relations with one another.
I believe it.
Well, Zalkane was weak, was sick.
There was no Viagra
already. So he was, oh boy. So he was, it was fine for her to enter, which again, perhaps indicated clearly that everyone knew the real purpose of why she was there. So in fact, what happens, she goes in, and let's just see one more sentence and we'll stop.
What does the Radak say to you afterwards? Moles? What is that
word? The word. The word Misharas is missing, is not written in a full form.
It should have been Misharetet or something.
Right. It's missing the chaser mimena hatav. Right, it's missing that letter.
Umilat, a word of a mesharetet doesn't mean anything. She, the mesharetet, she, Avishag, she didn't have a say whether somebody comes into the room or not. She's a mesharetet.
Right, well, that's...
Not a wife, she's not... She's,
in other words, she's nothing.
She's nothing.
She was a blanket. So let's just do one more sentence and we'll stop. V'tikod bat sheva v'tishtach l'melach. Even though this is a wife, this is a king. So therefore when bat sheva entered, she bowed down, she prostrated herself before the king. V'yomer ha-melech. And what does, after many years of marriage, what does the guy say to his wife?
What's your problem?
Malach.
What's your problem?
What are you doing here? Malach, what's going on over here? So the Radak, and this is how we'll conclude, the Radak says... The Radak tells us on Pasuk Tes Zion, Malach, how can you speak that way to Basheva? Lefishol Haisur Gila Lovo Etzla. The truth is, she was not coming by there often, or this was not the time when she typically would come. Yonaso David knew he al Dover Bo that she was coming for some reason, for some real important reason. Lefika Hamrla Malach, that's why he asked, what are you doing here? Oh, another reason, since she entered without permission, the fact that she barged in, it must have been something which was of tremendous significance. Actually, I want to conclude with one last thing, and we'll stop. I know it's a couple minutes in. That is an interesting Yerushalmi that said that Nasan will come in after Bathsheba and fill in whatever needs to be filled in. So the Yerushalmi says... Ask the question, V'chimutr l'saper l'ashen hara? What right does he have to speak? This is what it's brought down. It's the Talmud Yerushalmi. How does Nassan have a right to speak l'ashen hara and barge in? El Omer Reb Shmuel Bar Nachman Mishim Rebbe Yonasan. So he says the following, Mikan, we learn now from here, Shemutr l'omer l'ashen hara, that it is permissible for a person to speak l'ashen hara al balei machalokes. If there's someone who is causing a machlokas, dissension, causing problems, so you are allowed to speak lashon hara against that person to avoid that issue. So that machlokas should not continue, so therefore in that situation he was allowed to speak, even though normally it's considered lashon hara.